Hello and welcome to the Lancet podcast. Richard Lane with you here on Friday, March the 9th. This week we're focusing on a two-part series about stem cells, specifically the second paper in the series, but to mention that the first paper is looking at stem cells and regeneration of cardiac tissue. But we're going to focus on an interview I've done with Professor Paolo Maturini from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm in Sweden. And this concerns the exciting new sphere of regenerative medicine, which is looking at how stem cell technology could be used in the future to produce new tissues and even new organs without the need for transplantation. Professor Maturini, many thanks indeed for talking to The Lancet. Can you just remind us what regenerative medicine has been capable of up until now? Because there have been some exciting recent developments, haven't there?
Regenerative medicine is a new field of medicine and has basically two domains. One is tissue engineering, which is the replacement of diseased tissue and or organs, and the other one is cell therapy. Now, the basic concept of regenerative medicine is to create new tissues and or organs that are man-like by avoiding as well the intake of lifelong immunosuppression. So the fact is that this new branch of medicine tries to repair diseased cells or tissue and organ by either replacing them or giving cell therapy. But the basic bottom line is to avoid immunosuppression and therefore to improve significantly the quality of life of the patient.
Can you just outline a key step in this process? This is the creation, isn't it, of a bioengineered, a biological scaffold, like a matrix, I think you call it, don't you? And how you can then use stem cell therapy to basically differentiate the scaffold into new tissue or organs. This scaffold is essential, isn't it?
Well, it is essential. Now, the principle of regenerative medicine is to have three key components in the tissue engineering of whatever, a tissue or an organ. One is a scaffold, the other one are the cells, and then a so-called bioreactor, where you put the two components, the cells and the scaffold, together. Now, scaffolds can be either natural, that means donated from a human body or eventually animals, or can be artificial, like made up entirely into the lab using synthetic material. The process by which you obtain nature's scaffold is to obtain, for instance, a human part of the body, like the trachea, like the esophagus, the lungs, or the heart and liver, and then take out the cells responsible of the immunoresponse. That means the rejection process that you always have if you do a so-called allotransplantation, if you transplant from an organ from one patient to the other. By taking out the cells, the scaffold is no more immunocompetent. So when you implant it into another human being, you would not expect that you will never have an immunoreaction, and therefore you do not need immunosuppressive drugs. Having said this, this is not sufficient, because if you implant a scaffold into a human body, he will die, in the sense it is not living. You need cells, the specific cells of the liver, of the heart, of the kidney eventually, of a given more simple or complex tissue, that needs to reseed this scaffold so that it is completely then living and accepted by the human body.
Thank you. So moving on from that, given that a start has been made, and the one that Lancet readers will be familiar with would be the bioengineered part of the trachea published at the end of 2008. What are the main biological scientific challenges that need to be overcome before this new area of regenerative medicine can become mainstream and applied in a human setting?
First of all, we have several regulations to respect, in the sense that the bioengineered tissue and or organ needs to be completely safe, biocompatible. The technique needs to have had extensive evaluation in the preclinical scenario before implanting it into the human body. So I think that before attempting to replace with a bioengineered organ part of the body, we really need extensive evaluations in culture, in the laboratory, and in animals.
You mentioned in your paper the important ethical issues surrounding this issue, they can't be underestimated, can they? Can you just give some detail as to what the ethical issues are that need to be overcome, again, to move this new and exciting area of medicine forward?
Well, first of all, the respect of the patient, because the most important endpoint here is to help and or save a life, a human being, and therefore a patient. And I think that we do not have the right simply to try to approach or implant bioengineering organs without a logical sense, without ethical respect of all the human rights. In this sense, first of all, if we go for a transplantation of a bioengineered organ or tissue, we need to be sure that this has had a very extensive evaluation preclinically, has demonstrated a complete safety for the patient, and has undergone a few very extensive evaluations by the local and national regulatory authorities, because otherwise everybody could do what unfortunately in few places is done right now, just trying, for instance, to sell cell therapy or stem cell therapy and just to make money from it, and this would make no sense. It is still an experimental therapy, and as long as the major authorities nationwide or worldwide has not approved this as a standard therapy, it should be regarded as an experimental and therefore should undergo the most extensive regulatory evaluation as possible.
If you had a crystal ball, I realize you don't, but in a sense you almost do, because this is very cutting edge new technology, experimental medicine here. What do you think can happen looking at the short, medium and long term? When do you think significant change, developments or advances could be made in regenerative medicine?
There are many issues here. First of all, for instance, what we have learned from the first transplant done in 2008, only these few years, is just amazing. We learn daily how to improve and how to propose a safer therapy to the patients. So this is a key point. Second, I think that even the medical community or the research community should have a more brilliant sense of what is the need of the patient, because there are so many resources spent individually, and probably the best would be to do research and to try to translate this new field of medicine altogether for the purpose of saving a life, not just for the ego, as we have mentioned into the paper. And by respecting this, one could imagine, for instance, with the necessary funding for the research, we could expect to go further. For instance, one of the our aim is to go to the next level of complexity by transplanting not only the windpipe but as well the esophagus, because, for instance, the esophagus is still a tube but has a motility, and we need to reproduce that motility. And sooner or later, probably, either tissue engineering or cell therapy will become a standard therapy for failing organs.
And just a quick follow-up on that, you mentioned obviously the windpipe, you know, the trachea, the one that was reported at the end of 2008 in The Lancet, the esophagus. What about organs, again, mentioned in your paper, such as the heart, the lungs, the kidneys? Theoretically, is the concept the same, or do different organs represent different levels of complexity?
The concept might be the same, but we are talking about organs and not tissue. So the level of phylogenetic complexity is completely different, much higher. And we need much more resources, much more time to safely provide evidence that it does work, not only in small animals, but even in more advanced animals, so before going to the clinic. So we are not there. I think that a major advances will be made in the next 10 years, but I don't think that it's just a question of only producing bioartificial organs. For instance, we have learned with the trachea transplantation that we can increase the regenerative capacity of the human body by giving, for instance, growth factors, so-called bioactive molecules. And probably it is this association or these lessons that we have learned that could make it possible within the next 10 years to come to a full or partial organ replacement using regenerative medicine.
Well, it's fascinating, exciting area of medicine. But in the meantime, I do encourage everyone listening to this podcast, do read the professor's paper. It's the second paper in the Lancet series on stem cell technologies. Professor Paolo Maturini from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. Many thanks indeed for talking to The Lancet.
Thank you so much.
And do look out for a comment in the current issue of The Lancet, which evaluates the stem cell series. Many thanks indeed for listening. See you next time.